This is Pat Tomlinson, and I'm talking with Dr. Daryl Norton. Dr. Norton has been a longtime technical consultant with Ag Spectrum. He retired after an esteemed career as director and research soil scientist for the USDA ARS National Soil Erosion Research Laboratory, located on the campus of Purdue University. He is a professor emeritus in the Purdue Departments of Agronomy and Agricultural Biological Engineering. Daryl has authored and co-authored many scientific articles and technical reports throughout his career related to various aspects of soil erosion and the use of gypsum and other high-calcium materials. He has an international reputation and has been widely invited to present results from his research at scientific conferences all over the world. He spent sabbaticals at universities in Brazil, Australia, and Vienna. The Purdue University College of Agriculture recognized him as among the top 2% of professors of all time whose research has had the greatest impact. Daryl, I appreciate your willingness to take some time from your schedule to talk. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm fine, Pat, and thanks for the opportunity to speak with everybody.
Well, I've been looking forward to talking with you. Certainly, you've had an impressive career outside of Ag Spectrum and are a leader in the field of soil science. You've also been able to watch both Ag Spectrum develop over the last 40 years from the perspective of your role as a university research scientist, but also while being an important company partner and uncovering some of the key insights that drive our system. I'm not sure that all the newer Ag Spectrum associates are aware of that history and the support that you can provide associates and growers today. To start out, I'd like to hear about your career and the scope of your research. I know a quick internet search showed something like 59 research papers with you listed as an author. To most of us, that's a pretty impressive number, but I think it may be low. Regardless, it's clear that you have a pretty deep understanding of how agricultural soils function. Tell us about your research and how your career developed.
Well, I worked at Ohio State, and some of those publications from research that I did while I was on a staff there teaching and doing research, but it's actually a far higher number than 59. Google never lets you go on Scholar. Last, I kind of lost count, it was over 300. Something like that. Anyway, I came to the National Soil Erosion Research Lab at Purdue after I left Ohio State in 1982 when the lab first had opened. I was the first new scientist that they had hired at the lab, and my job was trying to bridge the gap between soil chemistry and soil physics and study erosion more from a basic soil property perspective and try to figure out this mysterious factor called soil erodibility, which is somewhat physical, but also largely involved the interaction of rainwater and soil particles and how they detached and moved on landscapes. So I started early work dealing with soil surface sealing and crusting, other issues such as soil compaction related to soil erodibility, getting water into the soil instead of allowing it to run off. We worked a lot with the early residue cover critical factor that was needed, how much a percentage was needed to slow down the runoff and try to get it to infiltrate, and many, many different aspects of soil and water chemistry and landscape scale movement of water in essentially three dimensions, both surface and subsurface, seepage-induced erosion, and number of other various factors, and later in the career even involved to the combined effect of wind and water erosion, which you might not think that wind erosion during a rainstorm would be much of a factor, but it can actually deposit soil particles upslope once they're detached by the rain and then blown by the strong winds and a thunderstorm. And then, of course, putting all this information into models and trying to describe fairly quantitatively for the farm bill and what is highly erodible land and how do we can control it more economically.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we always recognize that the ability of water to infiltrate at the soil surface is kind of the other end of the spectrum, or maybe I should say it's a contrary indicator of the erodibility of soils. Is this where you began to look at gypsum really with more as a focus on a means of erosion control rather than a means of improving productivity?
Yeah, that's kind of how I got into using gypsum, because it is essentially an electrolyte that passively gives electrolyte to the rainwater, allows it to alter its properties and enter the soil, carrying the nutrients, calcium and sulfur, with it into the soil and help various other factors that reduce erodibility, such as rooting, increasing rooting amount as well as depth of rooting, and that greatly reduces soil erosion on slopes.
So how did you first cross paths with Ag Spectrum?
Well, I've been working on gypsum as well as other high calcium materials in agriculture related to infiltration and surface sealing. And I had published a small little abstract at the American Society of Agronomy meetings in St. Louis in 1994. And it was just a very incomplete project that we had started. It was kind of preliminary data that I presented there. Ag Spectrum, Cliff Ramsey, our technical director at that time, he had actually read that abstract. He and Wayne Studeman, our CEO, had been visiting a colleague of mine in botany and plant pathology at Purdue, a block down the street. And after they finished, they thought, well, it might be worthwhile to come and visit with me. So unannounced to me, they just walked in off the street and asked to see me.
I guess that shows that cold calling can sometimes work out pretty well.
Yeah, I thought maybe there were salesmen, but not the traveling salesman type, because they didn't have a bag of wares that they were dragging along. But they told me who they were and their interest, and that they had ran across the work I was doing. And we just had discussion in my office. Cliff asked me a simple question, if there's any difference between calcium and magnesium. And I explained, well, yeah, they're two different elements and they chemically behave differently. And later in the conversation, it was, well, we're very interested in this line of research. What can we do to further it along? And I says, well, I had a undergraduate working with me on the project from the Ukraine. She was looking for graduate work at Purdue, but I didn't have the funding. So they said, well, we might be able to assist you in that. And it worked out that they actually funded her master's research to further work on gypsum and high calcium effects on soil to meet their objectives as well as mine, and that began our relationship.
At that time, how well understood were the benefits of high calcium content soils in the research and academic communities? And of course, as I ask that, I have to think that they really aren't that well understood even now by most in the ag industry.
Well, the more I worked with it, the more I found out, of course, is 6 hours in a library are worth 6 weeks in the lab or 6 months in the lab if you read more. But anyway, it had been really popular back in the 1790s. In fact, a book in 1798 was written on gypsum use in agriculture in North America. And actually, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson had used it on their farm. And it was largely imported to the colonies from Nova Scotia because East Coast did not have natural deposits like the Midwest does. But it was used in agriculture and in Europe. When our pioneers came over from Europe, they brought it. With the advent of more modern fertilizers, we just kind of forgot it for about 100 years. And then it was rediscovered later as supplies, first from making high phosphate, low sulfur fertilizers after TVA developed triple superphosphate, the wet acid process to produce it, where rock phosphate was attacked by sulfuric acid, and they produced gypsum from that process by breaking phosphorus and calcium apart and precipitating gypsum and low-cal phosphates. And it was very plentiful supply, and we had started working with that in actually 1988 and found it very, very successful for controlling erosion, and farmers liked it. In fact, one supply had disappeared, 10-year supply, in 1 year to use in peanuts in the southeast states because the farmers got free phosphate out of it, plus the calcium and sulfur that were needed by the peanuts.
Well, to broaden the discussion a little bit to the agricultural soils that we work with, we know air and water management is critical for soil productivity. Does this mean it's accurate for us to simply think of calcium content as the most important factor in a soil? What do you look at as the most important characteristic of an agricultural soil when you evaluate it for productivity?
That's tough one, but I wouldn't say calcium alone is the number one, but it is a very important aspect related to how soil manages water. And of course, water is not just for agriculture, but for all life is important. Without it, we wouldn't have any microbiological activity. We wouldn't be on the surface of the earth or plants. So it is needed, and it is probably one of the most important aspects of getting water into the soil, because calcium is not dispersive like all the other cations that we measure in a soil test, which are magnesium, potassium, and sodium.
I think we do at Ag Spectrum talk a fair amount about the dispersive qualities of minerals like magnesium and sodium and potassium, and in contrast, the properties of calcium that support soil aggregation. Are there other aspects, though, of having them in the proper balance that are important to their impact on soils?
It is a base ion, which, like the other three I just mentioned, counter the effects of hydrogen, which is an acidic ion. Although it is a cation, one of the important factors in quality of soil and soil health and ability to produce crops is the number of bases versus the amount of acidic ions, those being hydrogen and aluminum. And aluminum is also toxic to plants at 1 part per million for most of the corn varieties that we grow in the Midwest. Also, wheat becomes, the roots become shrunk a little bit at 1 part per million and are completely gone by about 8 part per million aluminum. So those are other very important factors, and that's why we look at the ratio of calcium to magnesium, or calcium to magnesium plus sodium is another important ratio that we find important, because both magnesium and sodium are dispersive in the presence of low electrolyte rainwater, and that causes enhanced surface sealing.
Well, we know surface sealing can be very detrimental, because even though there are certainly times when we have too much water in our soils, we know that it's probably more frequent that we aren't able to take full advantage of the mid to late season precipitation because of the lack of infiltration.
Every inch of water we can get into the soil in a drought like we had last year in most of the Midwest can make a huge difference in the agricultural productivity later in the season.
So it sounds like we need to focus on the whole balance of cation minerals in the soil when driving soil productivity, and not just focus on calcium.
That's correct.
So if the cation balance and content of a soil is so critical to know and manage, is this something that is consistent between soil labs, or is our policy to use Midwest labs related to the cation soil test results that they give?
That's why we use Midwest Lab, because they produce a much better test on the cations and the ratios. If we look at a single individual cation, they can vary depending on the season, particularly potassium, because it's taken up by plants and then re-released when rain hits the residue laying on the surface. So it gets recycled every year and is tied up in the soil, whereas calcium will do various different things rather than get tied up. It can be used to actually make those tied up elements fixed, like potassium and ammonia. Calcium will actually go in to the exchange complex and selectively remove those, because of just the physical chemistry of calcium is smaller. Even though it's a heavier ion, it will remove in a hydrated state potassium and ammonium sitting on the clay lattice and make those available for the plant. And that's why calcium is important in total amount as well as that in the soil solution. We can't measure that easily without sucking water out of the soil and analyzing it, but to measure the ratio as we get from Midwest labs, a high calcium to magnesium ratio will predict a high calcium in the soil solution that will make this recycling of the mineral nutrients much more active.
So when we think about the importance of the cation balance in a soil, you can't help but come back to how useful gypsum can be in improving it. But there are a lot of areas that struggle with access to gypsum and supply limitations. Are there any substitutes in terms of products or management practices that can work like gypsum when gypsum is not available or economically available in an area?
Well, yes, there are, but in very particular circumstances, such as when you have acidification, therefore justifying the application of agricultural lime. If we can get high calcium lime and apply it instead of dolomitic lime, that is a big management practice that can help you increase your calcium magnesium ratios, but only when you need lime. It's not going to do anything. You can add lime and it'll just increase your pH up to the pH of lime, which is 8.3, and that's higher than we want for availability of nutrients. But it takes acid. Really, if you get pHs at 7, where there are no hydrogen ions in the soil system, that lime is just going to sit there and not react unless we get acid rain, because we scrub all of our power plants and refineries that used to contribute to acid rain to meet EPA standards now. We don't get the acid rain that we used to. In fact, actually, sulfur deficiency because of that is a big issue in our soils now that we didn't have even 20 years ago due to a combination of factors. And it's been documented by other people that the amount of sulfur deposition coming in rainfall is much, much, much lower than it used to be.
Does cover cropping have any impact on the cation balance in a soil?
Well, all roots produce acids that will acidify the soil over time. In fact, that's why we occasionally have to lime. Nitrogen fertilizers typically is like AMS that we apply to meet our nitrogen needs. That can help. Also, ammonium thiosulfate in the nitrogen band for corn is very helpful to acidify that zone to assist the plants in making other nutrients available. And over the long term, they will require some base to be added to neutralize that over time, but the best way is to passively get it from gypsum. We've initiated some research that was first reported on a surface in Florida this year, but we'll have more information next year to report on some other management techniques that we may be able to use in place of gypsum.
Well, that could be really exciting for some areas and a real positive, especially as the gypsum supply seems to become more and more of a challenge each year. So, Daryl, newer associates may not realize what a great resource you can be to them and their clients. And I guess I wanted to ask you, what are the main topics, the main questions that you tend to get from associates?
It covers a gamut of anything related to soil, but I get a lot of questions, of course, about gypsum. Like you mentioned, where can we get some? What would it cost? And things like that. Me as a consultant for Ag Spectrum does not sell gypsum, but part of what I do is try to keep my ear to the wall and find out what people are doing that actually can get it and relay that information. Last week, I helped a dealer who had come across a product called gypsum. I was on the road in Iowa, and I asked him to send me a picture of it until we could get a test done, and he sent a picture of a bag that looked exactly like fly ash, and we want to get testing on any new material to make sure it meets all of our specifications. Most of all, that it's not something like fly ash that contains heavy metals that can cause a farmer problems in the future and maybe contaminate the soil and not even be able to plant on it in the future, depending on what is in it. People in the marketplace will sell anything as gypsum, even though it may be a mix of other materials and a little bit of gypsum. So I recommended not using it until we do get a full test through Midwest Laboratories.
I think with a lot of the substances that growers apply to their soils, it's sometimes easy to overlook the importance of actually testing them and making sure that they are exactly what we expect them to be.
Lime also is very important to have it tested, because a quarry, even though you've used it for years and it's always been high-cal lime, they get into different layers within the same quarry or even farther from a new vein they incur, and both deeper as well as laterally it can change, and it might become a dolomitic lime that once was a calcitic lime in the same quarry. So at least each year we ask associates to send in a most recent sample, and that way we're more sure that at least within a growing season that a farmer is not putting on dolomitic lime rather than calcitic lime. I had an old farmer in Ohio explain to to me one meeting that he came up after I talked about gypsum, and he says, you know, in 1950, I applied a single application of dolomitic lime, and it ruined my soil and took me 37 years to recover from it. And I says, well, how did it ruin your field? He says, well, it increased the pH like I had intended, but all of my tiles no longer ran. 37 years later, I applied gypsum, and suddenly they started running. And I know that's anecdotal, but some of our researchers at Ohio State have done research later that's published and show that maybe he indeed was telling the truth. But we get a lot of questions on gypsum and lime.
Are there other materials growers are using besides gypsum and lime that often get overlooked and don't get tested as they should?
We get a lot of questions on gypsum and lime, and also spray water, because the water quality related to how I got started working with gypsum is also the same things affecting rainwater, and spray water are very important. Most of our city waters are hard waters and high pH. They have a lot of electrolyte in them, and therefore we need to test those waters and treat them accordingly with products that make sure that they don't precipitate out all their high-cost pesticides or herbicides in the process. They're recommending jar testing, and testing themselves with a jar is very important. So, and of course, soil testing. I get to see an awful lot of soil tests that come in from farmers with questions. Just last week, farmers were discussing carbon scores and carbon sequestration, and they read a lot in farm magazines about getting paid for sequestering carbon. And of course, not just me, but other of our staff get questions all the time about some new product out in the marketplace that they've heard of or seen in the trade magazines, and I try to at least look up what they're talking about and not really give an opinion, because it's not my job to critique other people's products, and just advise them that they need to be looking at part of our system, and unless they contribute to the system, they're probably not worth spending our time looking at them. But we get that all the time.
Well, Daryl, you've given us a lot of good information, and I want to really thank you for your generosity with your time and sharing your experience and information and knowledge with us. Thank you again, and I hope you have a great day.
You too, Pat.